Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues the industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
And we're back live at Oracle Open World on Chip Chat. I'm Allison Klein, and with me is Mitch Schultz. You've been on Chip Chat before, but we're delighted to have you with us at Oracle Open World. Welcome.
Good to be back, Allison.
So the topic for our interview today, because we always like to make it edgy, is the demystification of big data and what's really going on with unstructured databases. And I'm going to start with a simple question. You were on the program recently, and you were talking about real-time analytics. What is the difference between the approach of building a structured database architecture and the challenges with unstructured databases and what the big internet players have been talking about?
You know, when I was with you last time, Allison, we talked about how cloud was invented 30 years ago with time sharing on mainframes. And if you go back even further in time, you will find that the fundamental notion of big data was invented about 45 years ago with the notion of a key value store, otherwise known as a VSAM file in IBM mainframe speak. And the fundamental difference is that the structure, to the extent there is any, of unstructured data is provided by the programmer, the mind of the programmer who's accessing the data that's stored in this key value store format. And they use programmatic methods that are explicitly written in procedural types of languages to extract that data out and provide meaning to it. The whole point of data is to provide insight and meaning of some sort about the world. And you can do that programmatically, but what we found 45 years ago was that that's not the most efficient way to extract meaning and value from data. So it was preferable, if a machine was powerful enough to provide this structure, to externally define the nature of the structure of the data that was stored in the database, and thus was born the very notion of a database going back into the mid-60s when machines were very, very slow and not powerful enough to do it particularly well. Now, key value stores have been around since then, and they've evolved into the modern era. And now the big thing with big data is massive amounts of data distributed across thousands of machines, still with this key value store, and made accessible by creative methods of doing essentially job scheduling across large numbers of machines to do many, many tasks in parallel. And that's valuable stuff. There's no doubt about it. It's useful. However, there's no magic. It hasn't created some breakthrough in data access and manipulation that hasn't existed before. It's just a matter of scale. So in this era of the internet and data exhaust and thousands of petabytes a day of stuff being generated by things around the net and needing to make sense out of those things and put them into useful service, it's important to have some sort of filtration mechanism that can scale and keep abreast of that data. But we shouldn't expect that filtration mechanism to also be able to provide the kind of powerful insights and analytics that are required to really make use of that data in flexible ways.
So it sounds like you are painting a picture of a back to the future moment where, if I took your argument further, we'll come to the next generation of structured data to deal with the scope and size of the internet exhaust per your term.
Data exhaust is the term
I've
seen applied to that and produces some good visuals of airplane exhaust trails. I hate to riff off of Larry's comments, but I'll do it in this particular case. The history of relational databases and certainly the Oracle portfolio, and since we're here at Open World, might as well talk about what Oracle's up to, is one of continuous adaptation and absorption of new ideas that seem like they're good and useful for certain things. So object-oriented databases, in-memory technology, and now with the introduction of the big data appliance that they're talking about here this week, the addition of the big data stuff. But you know, Oracle is, I think, accurate in their characterization of the role of that technology in the continuum. It's not going to replace the core Oracle database engine, it's going to complement it. You don't want to put petabytes of trash data in your mission critical, multiply redundant, massively backed up, disaster recovered core Oracle database engine. That's an expensive way to handle that data. You want to filter for the needle in the haystack on the cheap stuff quickly. And when you find that needle in the haystack, put it in the valuable stuff where you can actually examine that needle as effectively as you would like it to be. The new thing here, in addition to the scale out big data thing, is the in-memory database analytic engine introduction, the Exalytics platform, which is kind of the ultimate instantiation of this phenomenon. You take all those needles you've extracted from the haystack, you put them in memory, and you can start to ask some very, very interesting questions very, very quickly and get answers very, very quickly when you can take action on them thanks to in-memory technology. If you have to drop out of memory and go across a network to coordinate with thousands of other nodes in a big data environment to get an answer to a question, it's no longer real time.
Right.
So
it seems like it's just the same old challenge of enterprise computing of delivering performance and managing latency.
Yes, there are no silver bullets. There's no magic. We're all dealing with the same laws of physics and economics here. And we at Intel have spent a lot of effort making Hadoop, which is sort of the starting point for a big data discussion. It's not Hadoop in itself. I should take the opportunity to kind of explain things to people. A lot of folks mistake Hadoop for something that actually does something by itself. It doesn't. It's a framework, a collection of tools in the Apache stack to which other entities attach their services. So one example is something called HBase, which is an actual key value store mechanism built on top of Hadoop that companies are using to address these kinds of problems. So Hadoop by itself is a framework for big data, and it requires other things to address the full range of functionality, which is what Oracle is doing with their own announcements here.
So if you wanted to characterize the difference, it seems like a corporation historically has had data sets that have evolved as proprietary information within the confines of their data centers. And today, they're accessing data from multiple places. You talked about in-memory. How do you get past the challenge of a diversified world of data?
You know, that's a tough one. I'm not sure you ever do get past that challenge. It's a curse and an opportunity that's going to be with us forever. But one example that I have from a recent discussion with a company in the healthcare arena that's doing a lot of cancer drug research on genomics and proteomics types of activities is trying to synchronize with hundreds of other research hospitals around the country to create a huge repository of patient data, anonymized patient data, that can be used to do clinical trials of cancer drugs without actually doing any clinical trials, which mm-hmm. you can do statistically if you have enough data, enough patient information. And what they told me is that their preferred mechanism for transmitting their local database to the shared infrastructure that everybody else is using is to put it to put a tape in a FedEx package and send it overnight to the target destination. Never underestimate the bandwidth of a 747 loaded with 9-track tapes. The latency sucks, but the bandwidth is pretty darn good. And it is a fact that while the internet is capacious, it is not free. And it's going to be some period of time before, if ever, that it has the kind of instantaneous, enormous bandwidth required to effectively synchronize all of this stuff. So one of Intel's messages in this area is the notion of federation, you know, the ability to tie together both internal and cloud-based data sources usefully within a single analytical framework. And that's not a solved problem at this point. But a lot of smart folks, including Oracle, are working on ways of addressing that in a secure manner so that companies can span that boundary effectively.
So it sounds like what you're saying is turn that data into the key nuggets of useful information locally where it is and then send it off to be analyzed as a whole in a central location rather than shipping off the raw data to a centralized location for analysis.
Centralizing everything for the sake of centralizing is probably not the best way of accomplishing the objective.
It's great for data center efficiency, but maybe not great for this. When you look at the underlying hardware platforms, you talked about in-memory. Tell me, you know, for the layperson, or I guess the non-database mission-critical thinking person every day, what is the difference between in-memory databases and the traditional structure, and why are we moving in this direction?
Why is this such an exciting change? Like everything else, in-memory databases have been around for a long time, too. I worked in the 80s on a product called IMS FastPath, which was IBM's in-memory hierarchic database management system. But the difference between then and now is actually pretty profound. The something like IMS FastPath was in-memory only in the sense that it was taking a disk-based representation of the data with pages of data with the structured information kind of dispersed across those pages in a well-defined manner, all being stored in memory. Think of it as using what were those things we used to do with DOS PCs when you would load an entire drive letter into memory,
right,
and treat it as if it was a regular drive. It still was a disk. You still were doing I/O to the data, but it was held in memory, so it was very fast.
Right.
So up until very recently, when someone said in memory, that's what they were talking about, was essentially memory as an accelerator for what were still fundamentally disk-based operations. What's happening now that Oracle has now entered into the market for, that SAP with HANA pioneered earlier mm-hmm. this year, and that others are actively pursuing, it's going to be a very competitive environment, is something fundamentally different. And that is the representation of the storage of all this data, the entire database, as if it was a giant multidimensional array, programmatically speaking, in your program. So to the members of the audience who speak C, you're declaring mm-hmm. an array with a number of members and a number of instances that's where every member is accessible as a load of an address in memory.
Mm-hmm.
There's no I/O operation. There's no storage stack. The data's just there. So when Larry says, and I can't even begin to approach his level of his mastery of the hyperbolic statement, but when he says that there is no response time, he's not lying. It's instantaneous. Memory operates on the order of 35 nanoseconds for access to a cache line of data, 64 bytes. That's, you know, light travels across this room in that period of time.
Right.
That's fast.
And what is the fundamental thing that's changed to be able to drive this?
Two things. One is Moore's Law continues its march, and memory as a result has gotten a lot cheaper and a lot more capacious. I think we've reached that critical level of capacity, of affordable capacity for memory, that allows companies to contemplate putting their entire database in memory, the mm-hmm. ones that require high performance. A large, just to calibrate your audience, a large online transaction processing database today for a big Fortune 500 company
mm-hmm.
is on the order of 50 to 100 gigabytes. That's easily affordable to put in memory today, where it wasn't 5 years ago. You can put many of them in memory. Now, BI databases tend to be much larger than that, but still, with compression effects from columnar compression, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So that's one, affordable, mm-hmm. large-scale memory footprints. The other is that the platform has become fundamentally much more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
When you're putting all your data in memory, it's kind of important that the memory not go away.
That's true.
Because if you've got a terabyte or 10 of data in memory and it goes away,
it's gone.
You have a bit mm-hmm. of an issue with reloading it from disk. It could be days before you get it all back online.
Right.
So Intel's contribution to this is the E7 processor with advanced machine check architecture recovery features that protect against some of the vagaries of physics that can produce hard errors in the memory environment that would bring down a smaller machine, a less capable machine.
When we come back, I'm going to ask you about real-world applications
okay.
of this. If you're listening, please type in your questions on Blog Talk Radio or at Intel Chip Chat on Twitter. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
We'll be right back with more of Allison's interview. Have a question? Visit us at twitter.com/IntelChipChat. We'll be answering questions live next.
And we're back on Intel Chip Chat, live from Oracle Open World. We've had an interesting first half of conversation with Mitch Schultz. And we were just talking about the two changes that have driven the adaptation of in-memory database. But now I want you to place it into the context of a real-world scenario. Imagine you're, you know, a corporate CIO. Why would you benefit from moving to this model, and who is actually moving, and what types of benefits are they receiving in terms of actual capabilities that they didn't have before?
Funny you should ask that question. I was in a break this morning between sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So I fired up my laptop and checked into MSNBC to see what was going on in the world. And there on the front page was a picture of a chemical plant down in Texas on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Flames shooting to the sky, lots of
That's
emergency vehicles,
yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. And I grew up in the Texas Gulf Coast, and that's the sort of thing that happened on a fairly regular basis down there.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was always blowing up a refinery somewhere. Which makes sense, given that there's a lot of volatile, dangerous chemicals flowing through those things with a lot of sources of fire involved. If something goes wrong, it goes wrong in a very big way. And I have spoken at length with companies like DuPont and Shell, people that run those kinds of plants, and ask them the question, well, what is in-memory good for you?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, it keeps stuff like that from happening. Because you're able to, for the first time, bring together enough information from enough different sources close enough to real time and correlate it together in meaningful ways so that you can detect the kinds of subtle patterns of interaction that result in those sorts of disastrous failures and prevent them from occurring. The history of real-time controls in these plants is that they're very localized. They deal with the valve in front of me and its pressure, mm-hmm. and what that thing is supposed to be. It hasn't been possible historically to correlate thousands of data points around this kind of a real-time system from previously dissociated elements in sufficient quantities with sufficient granularity and depth of insight to be able to see the sorts of nonlinear effects that are going on that lead to these sorts of disasters. So that's one example. Another is drilling. I know it's not politically correct, but people do still drill holes in the ground to extract oil from it, and it's a good thing if you can do that with as few trips as possible of the drill string. Doing that means having continuous monitoring of the drill string to watch for issues with collapse of the well bore around the drill string, because if the longer you can be making hole, the fewer trips you make, the less casing you have to put in, the more profitable and efficient your drilling operation is, and actually the more environmentally effective it is. So I have to throw in a green mechanism here.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is enabled by large-scale, real-time, in-memory analytics that's part of the sensor mechanism. I'm sure there are thousands of other examples like that of applications that companies wish they could have had the aspiration of deploying that simply weren't possible without the kind of speed that in-memory technology enables. And even if they could have availed themselves of that speed, the costs historically were so high that it wasn't affordable. So we're now kind of in this perfect storm of technology reaching a point where it's entirely affordable for meaningful scale problems, and the software arriving with Exalytics and HANA that allows companies to actually do it without having to write it themselves.
You know, when you were describing that situation with the plant, what came into my mind is what has been a root causing effort days or maybe weeks after an event like that becomes something that's preventable.
That's right.
It's
a lot more valuable when you don't blow the plant up than it is to figure out why you blew it up after the fact.
Yeah, I can see some job retention there too.
Yeah.
All kidding aside, do you think that this changes the way corporations look at their data stores? And does data that might be looked at as not valuable become valuable within this model?
Well, that's one of the theories of the whole data exhaust principle, that if you can get the cost of finding these patterns down low enough on a per haystack element mm-hmm. search basis, then you can afford to address very large scale problems in the hopes that sometimes you'll find something that is very valuable. The big in-memory stuff is much more likely to be associated with applications that you know up front are valuable. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be putting data exhaust onto an Exalytics platform in order to instantaneously query it. That wouldn't be economically efficient. You want to put stuff there that you know is valuable and give people the ability to ask large numbers of meaningful questions against it, because you know they'll find something that's valuable used properly. So it's kind of sum of both, I think, is the answer.
So that kind of brings us back to Hadoop.
Yeah.
So it does have a role in the enterprise.
Absolutely, it has a role in the enterprise.
And so is that the previewer of data and looking for those nuggets to pass on to the real guys?
I'm going to stay away from pejorative statements, because every element has value, right? Mm-hmm. None of them stand on their own. None of them are capable of handling the entire universe independently of the rest of them. They're all complementary. And if I can throw in a commercial thing from an Intel perspective, the beauty of it all is what we're trying to do in our roadmap is ensure that we have the right silicon products to align to each one of those opportunities. The kind of processor that's appropriate to 10,000 nodes running Hadoop, where no individual node is relevant in terms of whether or not it's online, is a very different piece of silicon than something on a 8-socket, 4-terabyte in-memory mm-hmm. database that absolutely positively cannot fail. And we have products that span that continuum. It takes a lot of work to make them happen, but fortunately we've got them.
What do you think is the speed that this new technology will be deployed in terms of broad proliferation within corporations, or has it already started to happen?
Well, there is the usual hype cycle going on that, but this time it's a little different. I regularly meet with Intel's board of advisors, and you know, I can't give the name of the company that said this, but they told us, you know, if we have to assign programmers to write code for SAP to make HANA work, that's what we'll do. It's that important to us.
So the value is just so tangible, there wouldn't be any reason not to do it.
Exactly. But you know, once they have confidence that it's deployable in production, this stuff is just, it's a little shaky at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's not proven on the ground with thousands of company years of production use, but it'll get there. And I think the important part of the Oracle announcement last night is now there's competition, and it's serious competition. And mm-hmm. you know, just as SAP is gonna try to get customers from Oracle on the strength of the HANA offering, Oracle's going to try to do the same thing. And stability and maturity are attributes that customers are going to look for, and competition's going to harden their offerings inevitably.
When you look at the trajectory of the hardware platforms associated with this, are there any challenges ahead in terms of being able to scale to meet this particular these you know, growing data sizes?
There's always challenges with that, Allison. It's the ongoing challenge in this industry. When I launched the Pentium Pro processor in 1995, we had to struggle like crazy to get four processors to talk to each other in a symmetric multiprocessing mm-hmm. fashion. And today, on an E7 platform, we've got systems in production with 80 cores coordinating on a 4-terabyte memory space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do.
World.
It's a whole different world. But you look at this in-memory stuff, and you can understand why you'd want to have something much, much larger than that. I don't have any announcements to make here, but it's something that we're working hard on. And as the in-memory database stuff matures, we're going to be challenged to keep pace with it. We've got a few things up our sleeve that we think will help. So stay tuned.
So, Mitch, it's been a delight talking to you, as always. You always inspire some new thoughts on Chip Chat. If folks want to keep the conversation going with you, where would they go and how do they connect with you?
Well, I actually have a blog on the server room at intel.com where I, if it's past the handlers, it may be posted by now, on just this subject of Exalytics and in-memory databases and their implications for customers. Love to hear from your listeners in that environment. I watch the commentary there and try to respond when I can.
Well, thank you so much for making time during Oracle World to spend some time with us. I know this is a very busy week for you. We'll be having you on the program again soon.
Okay. My pleasure, Allison. Take care.